Blog Talk Radio.
People you need to know. It's time for people you need to know. It's time for people you need to know on the radio. People you need to know. It's time for people you need to know. It's time for people you need to know.
Welcome to People You Need to Know on Internet Radio. I'm your host, Sparkplug, publisher of People You Need to Know, Metro Atlanta's premier business spotlight publication, where we promote business people you can call today. For more information, log on to sparkplugpeople.com. My guest today has been helping people in Metro Atlanta with legal problems for more than 30 years. He received his undergraduate degree from Howard University and his law degree from Emory University Law School. His law firm has earned an AV rating from the Martindale Hubbell Law Directory, indicating the highest degree of legal ability, diligence, and ethical conduct in handling client matters. He has been a loyal client of People You Need to Know for more than a decade. I consider it a privilege and an honor to welcome the principal attorney for Jones & Associates, Attorney Thomas F. Jones, to the show. Attorney Jones, how are you today?
I am doing good, Sparkplug. How are you?
Fantastic, and I'm trying to get better.
I appreciate so much the opportunity to be on your wonderful show, and I'm looking forward to sharing with you for the next few minutes.
All right. Well, matter of fact, let's get right into it. You were born on December 2nd, 1946 in Atlanta, Georgia. Is it safe to say that you are a Grady baby?
Sparkplug, believe it or not, the black community had its own hospitals back then. There were two hospitals that were on or near Hunter Street, which is now Martin Luther King Drive, and I was born at one of those, Harris Hospital.
How was life growing up for you here in Atlanta as an only child?
Well, it was a very pleasant life. Unlike today, we could go out and play, and I mean even at a young age, 6 and 7 years old, we could go out and run the streets and not have our parents worry about where we were. It was a community that had resources. It was a community that had standards. It was a community that provided everything that a young child could want.
Well, speaking of parents, you were raised by both of your parents. What kind of work did they do?
My mother was an elementary school teacher, and by doing that, she exemplified a caring for children and a caring for the black community, because she taught in schools that were not surrounded by the best communities. She was a hard worker, she brought work home, and she always exemplified the best in teaching, and many, many times I would observe students who she had taught come back and make the greatest comments about her. My father was in banking. He retired as the senior vice president of Citizens Trust Bank. During the days that I was growing up, before he went to the bank, he was employed at Brown Boy Bottling Company. And that's correct. Black folk had their own soda company here in Atlanta during the 40s and 50s. When he went to the bank, he was sort of a junior person there and was in charge of collections. So it was his responsibility to collect monies when persons were either slow in paying or not paying. On many Sunday afternoons, we would go out for a family ride and listen to all of the radio shows that came on Sunday afternoon. And eventually I noticed that we were going to some of the same houses over and over again. Only later did I figure out that he was actually going and making collection calls on Sunday afternoon in some of the neighborhoods that were not the best. So that's how he demonstrated the type of person that he was, and that's what I observed as I was coming up.
You wrote that you were inspired by both of your parents. How so?
Well, as I indicated, my father was in banking. He was very much of a business person. He believed very much in one taking care of their own personal responsibilities in a business-like way. He preached good credit. He preached being responsible and being prepared. He was also very active in our church, where he sort of took over the financial program of the church. So I always saw him doing good things and positive things. And as far as my mother's concerned, being a teacher and being the type of person that she is always the sweetest person that you can imagine, the sweetest person that anyone who has met her has ever met. So from that, I got a good balance of the sweetness and gentleness, but at the same time, the business-like approach that one had to have to life.
Would you say your family would be considered, or was considered at that time, an upper-middle-class family, with your father a senior vice president at a bank and your mother a school teacher?
I would say so. Both of my parents graduated from college, and my mother had advanced work towards a master's and eventually got a master's. And I think that certainly qualified one to be in the middle class. So I would say very definitely yes. Also, they could afford to invest in private schooling for me during my elementary school years, which I think made a lot of difference in my life from that point on.
Where did your father and your mother graduate from college?
My mother graduated from Bennett College in Greensboro, North Carolina, and my dad was a graduate of Morehouse College. He was the president of the student body in 1944.
Wow. Well, as a child, you were a good student in school, and your favorite subjects were reading and social studies. Do you still love reading today, and what's the best book you've ever read and why?
I still love reading. I, frankly, Spark Plug, don't get a lot of time to do what I would call recreational reading, but I still love to read Newsweek every week, even if I don't get to read the paper every night. As far as the best book I've ever read, the book that stands out in my mind is The Godfather. As I'm sure you remember, this is a book about gangsters, but when I make that comment, I don't mean to glorify what they were doing. But that book epitomized for me the concepts of family, the concepts of order, and the concepts of standards, even though their standards in some ways were not anything that we would really admire.
Well, you attended, as you were saying, a private elementary school and a public high school. What was the biggest difference between public school and a private school for you?
Well, I think that on the most important level, there was no difference because there was an opportunity to get a quality education in the public schools. Atlanta was blessed then, as it is now, with some great high schools who are turning out scholars that can compare with anywhere. And as long as one got good grades and was on the college prep track and associating with other students who were about doing something, I think the educational opportunities were there, and by no means was there anything lacking in my public school experience. I would also say that those who attend public school have the opportunity to mingle with all types of students, and that is experience that is very helpful as one gets out into the world and has to deal with all type of people, where the experience in private schools may be somewhat limited.
Well, I read that you didn't play organized sports as a child. Any particular reason why?
There wasn't very much of an opportunity. There were not the little leagues and the park football as is the case now for opportunities for younger kids. And when I got in high school, I went to H.M. Turner High School in 1960. And while it wasn't the biggest school, it was a pretty big school with a lot of good athletes. And coming in as a 110-pound eighth grader, graduating as a 135-pound senior, I just never had the athletic ability or size to make the teams because we really revered the athletes. The best athletes, obviously, were on the team. There were many, many good athletes who played along with me in the sandlots, particularly basketball. But I just never did get that opportunity to put on those shoulder pads and wear the school colors.
Well, moving on to high school, you participated in the chorus and the honor society.
Right.
What do you remember the most about each group?
When we talk about the chorus, that had a lot of the aspects of athletics, and a lot of the better athletes in the school were in the chorus. There was the necessity for hard work and practice. There was the necessity for teamwork. And there also came that day almost like game day when it was all on the line and it was time to perform and really get the job done. So I think that that was a very good experience. It also offered some experiences for travel around the Southeast United States because I was fortunate to be in two good high school courses at Turner High under Trannis Long and Harper High under Vivian Williams. As far as the Honor Society is concerned, that was an uplifting experience, primarily because of the people that you were associated with. Again, the fact that you're having an opportunity to continue to meet and interface with folk who are about something is very uplifting. So I enjoyed both of those experiences very much.
Well, after high school graduation, you went on and went to college, and in 1968, you received your Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering degrees from Howard University. What do you remember the most about Howard?
Well, Howard was quite an experience. I think that leaving home and going to another place was a new experience for me. My family was a Morehouse family, and I'd been around Morehouse all my life, but I really wanted to go away from home. And I also wanted to major in engineering, which was a major that was not offered at Morehouse. But going to Howard gave me the experience of leaving home and having to fend for myself, meet new people, and make my way in a strange environment, which I think is a good experience for any young person.
Well, you completed half of the coursework for a master's in electrical engineering at Georgia Tech. Why didn't you finish there?
I did end up majoring in electrical engineering at Howard and came out with that degree and took a job at Lockheed. At that time, Lockheed was the biggest employer around, and I was working as an electrical engineer. I participated in a work-study program that Lockheed had going with Georgia Tech, and that was when I completed those 30 hours. However, I did not finish because I actually ended up with a total change of career after about 3 or 4 years at Lockheed.
Well, you went on to graduate from Emory Law School after you made that career change in 1974. What advice would you give anyone who wants to become an attorney today?
Well, I think anybody who wants to be an attorney today should, first of all, know why they want to become an attorney, that they have to have that desire to be a helping person and to use the education for the good of others. As far as the brass tacks of what's necessary, it's obviously necessary to have good grades because law school is very competitive. I would also advise anyone interested in law school to study the English language and be prepared to use the English language very precisely, both in spoken and written form.
Okay. Well, I read that you had two major turning points in your life. One was when you switched your career choice from engineering to law. What was the second one?
The second one really stemmed from the first one. My experience at Lockheed was a good one, but I found out that in the aircraft industry, it's either feast or famine. Either you're working a lot of overtime if there's a big contract, or you're wondering if you're going to get laid off. And this was the thought process that led me into law. This was taking place in the late 60s, early 70s, and unfortunately Dr. King had been shot, and I think that all around America, those with opportunities were trying to be more inclusive as far as black people are concerned. There were scholarships and opportunities available in a way that has not been matched since, I don't think. But I took advantage of that and always had it in my mind to go into my own practice, and that, in fact, I did after I graduated from school. I will say that I also worked at Lockheed secretly, both while in school and when I first started my practice. That led to that second turning point when a case came in the door of my office that eventually took me to the United States Supreme Court. This was an adoption case, and it appeared just like the average run-of-the-mill case, but the issues were such that the Supreme Court decided to hear the case, and we were successful in getting a unanimous decision on behalf of our client in 1974. That case was Quillian versus Walcott, and I can still remember that day of arguing before the court. I call that a turning point because it gave me this type of self-confidence that has carried me forward up until this time. Because after all, when you can win a unanimous decision in the highest court of the land, you can feel pretty good about your capabilities, and that has been the case with me.
How did you celebrate that victory?
Well, my wife went to D.C. with me. We came back home. She was pregnant with my older daughter at the time. We went out for a nice dinner, came on back home, and that next day I was arguing in the City of Atlanta Municipal Court. So it was kind of like from one extreme to the other in one day.
And what's your most memorable experience about your time arguing in that case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, I would say just the argument itself. This was a court that was a very good court. One of the most gratifying aspects of it is that the decision was written by Justice Thurgood Marshall, who, of course, was my ideal, as well as the ideal of most young black lawyers during that time.
Well, you wrote that the lowest point in your life was the death of your father. What life lessons did he teach you?
Well, the main thing that I would say about my dad is that he was steady. He was dependable, he was courageous, and he was always businesslike. And I think the things that I had to hold on to during that time were just those things, and those are the things that can get you through hard times. I was very gratified during that period of time to see a number of friends and others who my father had helped in business, who he had counseled to be as he was, to keep your credit good and keep your word if you say that you're going to pay a financial obligation. And there were many, many stories, of course, I had never heard about how he helped change somebody's life by being in a help mode, doing what he could, which was in the financial world.
Now, in your humble opinion, how important is it for a father to be there for his son?
I think it's very important when it's an option. Too often it's not an option, but I think when it is an option, it's very, very important because children are going to look around and imitate what they see, good or bad. And it's not often it's the thing that you see that parent do. Again, seeing my father active in church work, actively helping people wherever he could, that was more than any lecture or sermon that he could have preached. And I do think it is very important to have discipline. Many times we associate that with fathers, and that is, again, very important. But I would stress it even in situations where the father figure is not present. Whoever's there, mother, extended family, whoever, has to be able to discipline that child. The child has to be afraid of something. I think personally that one of our problems today is we have too many young people and children who aren't afraid of anything. If you have a child where you can say go to a timeout and that's going to discipline that child, fine. But I think sometimes stronger measures are necessary.
Well, I read that the happiest moment in your life was the birth of your children and your grandchildren. How important is family to you?
Well, I think family is the most important thing. I've said a lot about my dad, and I hope I am reflecting some of his qualities. And I would say the same thing about my children and now going on to grandchildren. The other thing that I think is very important to remember about children, I'm a people watcher. I like to watch people to understand about human nature and to understand why people do what they do. Watching children, young children, can be very instructive about human nature because the little ones act just like the big ones, except that the children don't have any type of air or falsity or covering up what they're doing. So as you watch them, you can mold them into the type of people that we would all like to have as our children when they become grown people and we are older.
Well, speaking of children, I read that you really love helping to raise your twin grandsons. What do they teach you about life?
Again, it's almost like a fresh start. It's almost like going through one's own life or revisiting the life of your children. As they go through various stages, you can watch that human nature develop. You can watch the skills. You can watch, very frankly, the little devious ways as they begin to emerge, because they certainly will. Not being trained, they have to be trained, and until they are trained, they're not going to do everything in the way that you would like. And I think that behavior starts very, very early and needs to be corrected very early. So just going through that entire process, having an opportunity to have them sleep over and sort of pretend that they're our kids and relive some of the good days between myself, my wife, and all of our family. It's just been one of the most gratifying experiences that I've ever had. The twins are our first grandchildren. We have another grandchild on the way, and we're looking forward to that one so that we can begin that process all over again.
Well, let's get back to you, Attorney Jones. What drives you to get up in the morning and do it all over again?
Well, I guess, honestly, the first thing that drives me is survival. when one is in one's own business, it's a little bit different from being on the job with sick days and benefits. And while we have some of those things, it's necessary to keep it going. And as the principal or the one that is behind the business, I know that I have to be the driving force. The other thing, though, is the unique opportunity as an attorney to help somebody. We're in a business, we have to be paid, but in all circumstances, even if the payment is not what you might want it to be, there's the opportunity to help somebody in a way that is very meaningful to them. Generally, when someone comes to an attorney, it's one of the most important things that ever happens in their life. So you're there with good advice and good counsel in a help mode. So that's the thing that keeps me going.
What do you wish you had known 20 years ago?
Well, there are so many things. As I approach the later stage of my career and as I see my compatriots retiring, I wish I had appreciated a little bit more the value of consistent savings. And this was something that my dad used to preach all the time, the time value of money. When you put money away over a consistent period of time and that money earns interest, it grows to amounts which are really surprising. And it's best to, or really only possible, to really take advantage of that when one is early in life or early in one's career. So 20 years with some consistent savings would have been an advantage to me.
Well, what do you believe is the most overlooked secret to success?
I would say the most overlooked secret is to have an inquisitive mind. And I refer to that as asking the extra question. So many people, when they're learning to do something or in the process of doing something, once they get it done, I mean, they're satisfied. And once they learn how to do things, they're satisfied. But that extra question, which would be why is a thing done in a particular way? What is the theory behind why we do it that way? What's the history behind why we do it that way? That brings a deeper understanding of any aspect or any activity that you're involved in.
Attorney Jones, what are some of the rules you live by?
Well, I think it's very, very important to live by that basic Boy Scout rule of be prepared. And I would be a little bit more specific by saying be on time, be properly dressed, be properly prepared, and whenever the endeavor is over, always feel like you can look back on it and say that you did your best.
Well, how important is taking a stand for what you believe in to you? How important is that for you?
I think, and particularly in my profession, it is very important. To paraphrase Dr. King, if you haven't found anything to die for, you're not fit to live. At some point, you have to take a stand. Many times in the courtroom, we have to take a stand on behalf of our clients. Sometimes we'll say that it's more honorable to go down in flames, to just lose, rather than to be somebody's patsy or take a resolution that is not in your client's interest. Of course, the client with his one case may not feel that same way, but we always listen to the client who's boss. But I think you have to be prepared to go to the mat. You have to be prepared to fight. And so many times when people see that you are prepared to fight, they'll back off and give you a better deal, to use that expression, than you might be able to get otherwise.
Well, on a lighter note, what are some of your hobbies?
I love golf. I don't get to participate in it very much. I love spectator sports, both on TV and live. And believe it or not, this sounds kind of sick, but some of the best fun I can have is Saturday morning in my office doing some of my work without the hubbub of the phones and the clients and the staff. So actually, that's one of my primary sources of enjoyment because I have responsibilities and it just feels good to discharge those responsibilities.
Well, when was the last time you really had some fun and what did you do?
My wife and I recently took a trip to New York for my birthday, which was back in early December. And it was just a couple of days, but we really enjoyed that trip. We saw The Color Purple. We did a few of the tourist type of things. We did some shopping, and that was really a fun time.
Changing gears here. In 1989, you opened your own law firm. What inspired you to go into business for yourself?
Well, actually, that was the second time I had opened my firm, because I started out on my own when I first left Lockheed and graduated from Emory. There was a period in the middle of my career where I joined with three other lawyers and we had a firm for a while, but that did not last. So since 89, I have been out on my own. I think it's fun to be your own boss. It really is. But there are a lot of responsibilities to go with that, so I would not recommend that to anybody who is not prepared for a whole lot of hard work.
At Jones & Associates, what exactly do you do?
Basically, our job is to help people in interfacing or relating to the legal system. And that might be in any particular area, but we specialize in a few areas because it's impossible to really do everything and do it well. Our concentration relates to injury cases of all kinds, criminal defense, business and corporate type legal matters, probate matters, and any type of general litigation.
But who are your ideal clients?
My ideal clients can be defined as those who have respect for what I'm bringing to the table. And that is shown primarily by two ways. First of all, they will take my advice. And secondly, they will take financial responsibility for the services that are rendered to them. Those are the folk that I really enjoy working for because they show that they appreciate the effort that we're giving.
You've been an attorney now for about 34 years. How do you stay motivated?
The motivation, again, comes from the opportunity to help somebody. Anyone with a law degree and law membership has the unique opportunity to help somebody. As a business person, we have to pick our spot somewhat carefully, and we can't just go around in an undisciplined manner, but there is still going to be, on a daily basis, the opportunity to make a real difference in people's lives, and that's what keeps me going.
What is the best advice you've ever been given?
As far as advice is concerned, on a business level, I remember my law school graduation when one of the deans spoke to us, and that person said, when you're managing matters for clients, always send them copies of the documents in the case. And that has been good advice because it's a good way to keep people involved with what's happening in their case. It doesn't cost any more than the stamp to mail them out documentation that is either coming to you or you are generating and sending out anyway. So I think that has gone a long way to let my clients know what we're doing on their behalf.
Which historical figure do you admire the most and why?
I would have to say Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. And the reason I say that is this was an individual with a very powerful mind, with a very powerful intellect. And the love of language that I talked about before, both written and spoken, to really articulate his powerful ideas and to get them over. And I think he has basically changed the world. And I would certainly recommend at any time, but particularly next time we celebrate his birthday, get out the letter from a Birmingham jail, and we hear a few little snippets from it, but read the whole thing. It's about 15 pages, and it is a very beautiful exposition of his position and a very beautiful example of use of the English language.
If you could sit down and have lunch with anyone living today, who would it be?
You know, I thought about that question, and the answer I came up with right now today would be Michael Vick. I would love to talk to him, first to encourage him, and then to satisfy myself as to what his mindset is. Does he think he made mistakes? Is he learning from any mistakes that he thinks he's made? I think that would be about the most interesting conversation I could imagine.
Where do you go to relax and unwind?
My big relaxation place is home. That is my favorite place. It's a very comfortable place. My family is there. My wife is there. My big screen TV is there. So plopping down on the sofa and just kind of chilling out is my main means of relaxation.
What makes you laugh?
I guess the things that make me laugh out in the world are some of the comical things that you see, some comical personalities. Some people are trying to be comical, and some people are just comical. And, of course, we would never laugh and make fun of people, but I think there is a human drama going on, and there's a human comedy going on. So I love to watch that. Also, when I'm at home, I love to watch the older comedies, Cheers, Frasier, you know, that type of thing, just to sit back with no pretension and just laugh at something that is meant to be laughed at.
What makes you cry?
Sometimes almost anything. Tears come when I feel good and when I feel bad, many times in the morning. So, I mean, it can be anything. It can be a beautiful demonstration of human nature, or it can be something very, very sad when you see someone who's lost a loved one or lost their home or been a victim of a terrible and tragic crime.
How would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered, number one, as a person who tried to help somebody. Secondly, I would like to be remembered as a true professional. And by that, I mean someone who takes a difficult task and makes it seem easy, or someone who exemplifies that professionalism that gives people that you work with a feeling of confidence.
Is there a motto that you live by?
The only thing that I can say is that old Boy Scout motto again, be prepared. That says it all. Be prepared in every way. Be prepared mentally, spiritually, physically. Anticipate what's coming up so you can be prepared for it. Think forward. Think ahead. Just generally be prepared.
Attorney Jones, you've been with People You Need to Know now as one of our loyal clients for more than a decade. How has advertising the publication helped your business?
It is a tremendous help, and I have always tried to support those who are working to have black folk work with each other, but by far People That You Need to Know has been the best resource for me. The calls are coming on a regular basis, and this is a beautiful opportunity for like-minded, progressive people to learn about resources. I can say that I've never gotten anything but a good client from the magazine. And we're looking forward to continuing to participate in the magazine as well as all of the other formats that are made available.
And we're looking forward to having you in our 2008 Platinum Edition, which is going to be coming out here in probably about less than 10 days now. Well, Attorney Thomas F. Jones, thank you for being here and sharing some of your life story and legal expertise with us today.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you, and thank you.
You've been listening to People You Need to Know on Internet Radio. For more information about our guest, log on to sparkplugpeople.com. Until next time, always remember that you can add a spark to whatever you do.